Because it's by they are reading from Sri Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, verses 34 to 42.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Yo deva adito daityam.
Yo deva adito daityam.
Yo deva adito daityam. Avadhar yudhi durnaya.
Yeah.
Funga.
Who?
Devaya. By the demigods.
Atitaha.
Being requested. Devyam.
The demons.
About hit.
Killed.
Yudi. In a fight.
Dujaya.
Very fierce.
Muhurtam.
For a second only.
Ayu.
Duration of life.
Jatva.
Knowing.
Etya.
Approached.
Sapuram.
His own abode.
Sandadhe.
Fixed. Manaha.
Mind.
Translation: King Tvanga was unconquerable in any fight. Requested by the demigods to join them in fighting the demons, he won victory, and the demigods, being very pleased, wanted to give him a benediction. The king inquired from them about the duration of his life and was informed that it only one moment more. Thus he immediately left his palace and went to his own residence, where he engaged his mind fully on the lotus feet of the Lord. King Katvanga was unconquerable in any fight. Requested by the demigods to join them in fighting the demons, he won victory. And the demigods, being very pleased, wanted to give him a benediction. The king inquired from them about the duration of his life and was informed that he had only one moment more. Thus he immediately left his palace and went to his own residence, where he engaged his mind fully on the lotus feet of the Lord. We read from text 34. No purpose. Text 34. When the chaste wife of the Brahmana saw that her husband, who was about to discharge semen, had been eaten by the man-eater, she was overwhelmed with grief and lamentation. Thus she angrily cursed the king. O foolish, sinful person, because you have eaten my husband when I was sexually inclined and desiring to have the seed of a child, I shall also see you die when you attempt to discharge semen in your wife. In other words, whenever you attempt to sexually unite with your wife, you shall die. Thus the wife of the Brahmana cursed King Sudarsha, known as Mitrasaha. Then, being inclined to go with her husband, she set fire to her husband's bones, fell into the fire, and went with him in the same destination. He has several names to this. Another one was Kamaspada, means black spot. When the sister cursed him to become a Rakshasa by some trick of the Rakshasas, and he was innocent, he was so angry that he wanted to curse the Vasishtha. So then he took the water, chanted the mantras, he was just gonna throw it. Then his wife pleaded with him. He's a Brahmin, you can't do that. He's a sage. So then he just let it off down his hand and it fell on his legs, feet, so he got black spots everywhere. I have a name. But here it's called Mitrasaha. We know him as Sudarsha. After, text 37, after 12 years, when King Sudarsa was released from his curse by Vasishtha. He wanted to have sexual intercourse with his wife, but the queen reminded him about the curse by the Brahmani, and thus he was checked from sexual intercourse. After being thus instructed, the king gave up future happiness of sexual intercourse and by destiny remained sunless. Later, with the king's permission, the great saint Vasishtha begot a child in the womb of Madayanti. Madayanti bore the child within, saying the sage curses him to become a Rakshasa. Then he asked him, can you be the father of my wife's child? Madayanti bore the child within the womb for 7 years and did not give birth. Therefore, Vasishtha struck her abdomen with a stone and then the child was born. Consequently, the child was known as Ashmaka, the child born of a stone. Ashmaka is the grinding stone in parts. Text 40. From Ashmaka, Balaka took birth. Because Balaka was surrounded by women and was therefore saved from the anger of Guru Parashurama, he was known as Nari Kavacha, one who is protected by women. Nari, Nara, man, right? Nari, lady, Kavacha. I don't know the story, but I guess he was, when Parashurama was killing the Kachas, he had probably a bunch of women surrounded him, these queens, and so Parashurama couldn't fight him. So then he left. So then he was. When Parashurama vanquished all the Kattiyas, Balaka became the progenitor of more Kattiyas. Therefore, he was known as Mulaka, the root of the Kattiya dynasty. Text 41. From Balaka came another son named Dasarath, and from Dasarath came a son named Ayodhavidhi. And from Ayodhavidhi came King Vishvasha. The son of King Vishasha was the famous Maharaj Katvanga. King Katvanga was unconquerable in any fight. Requested by the demigods to join him in fighting the demons, he won victory and the demigods, being very pleased, wanted to give him a benediction. The king inquired from them about the duration of his life and was informed that he had only one moment more. Thus, he immediately left his palace and went to his own residence where he engaged his mind fully on the lotus feet of the Lord. Purple, his mind is easy, but the example of Maharaj Katvanga in performing devotional service is brilliant. Maharaj Katvanga engaged himself for only a moment in devotional service of the Lord, but he was promoted back to Godhead. Therefore, if one practices devotional service from the beginning of his life, surely he will return home back to Godhead, without a doubt. Asam Shaya. In the Bhagavad Gita, the word Asam Shaya is used to describe the devotee. There, the Lord Himself gives this instruction. Now hear, O son of Prita, Arjuna. By practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full and free from doubt. The Lord also instructs, Janmakama, Samedhivyam, Evam, Yogadhitakata, Takpadeyam, Punajjana, Naitivami, Tisodhuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. agreed before nine. Therefore, from the very beginning of one's life, one should practice bhakti yoga, which increases one's attachment to Krishna, for Krishna. If one daily sees a deity in the temple, makes offerings by worshipping the deity, chants the holy name of the personality of Godhead, and preaches about the glorious activities of the Lord as much as possible, he thus becomes attached to Krishna. This attachment is called Ashakti. When one's mind is attached to Krishna, Maye Shakti Manaha, one can fulfill the mission of life in one human birth. If one misuses the opportunity, one does not know where he is going, for how long he will remain in the cycle of birth and death, and when he will again achieve the human form of life and get the chance to return home back to Godhead. The most intelligent person, therefore, uses every moment of his life to render loving service to the Lord and the world. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachamini Nevishesha Sundarani Gauravani Kiti. So this story of Maharaj Katvami will continue to the end of the chapter. But he was telling how he was such a great warrior, although as a human being, even the demigods asked him to assist them in fighting. So he got his question answered. How long did he have to live? And they said, you only got a moment left. So then immediately he left. A moment means not one tenth of a second. I mean, you don't have very long until your line is finished. So then he went and meditated on the lotus feet of Krishna and went back to Godhead without having the tribulations of old age and disease and all that stuff. So lucky. But obviously he was a devotee of Krishna before. Of course, how do you know what to do? So he knew exactly what to do. So, and he did it at the time of death, and this way he went back to Godhead. Krishna said, whatever you think of at the time of leaving your body, that state was surely attained. But to actually think of Krishna at the time of death may not be so easy thing for everyone, and this one is actually attached to Krishna, because time of death is generally a very difficult time for you. Very intense time, because you know we don't actually know what the future, we don't actually know where we're going. So it's a very intense time. And generally the mind, when at times of extreme danger, it goes to when you realize there's no course of escaping this danger, the mind generally goes back to a time or a situation where you felt safe. And sometimes a plane is crashing and they find a black box and the pilot says, Mother. That's where he's trained up with his shelter and couldn't do anything else, who to turn to. So then you go there. That's why we have to make Krishna the center. Krishna should be the main attachment. And we learn this by the practice of bhakti. And this stage of ashakti is very, very advanced stage. But once you're ashakti, then you really have no problem in remembering Krishna, because you are attached to Krishna. Now we're attached to so many other things. We're attached to Krishna, but we're attached to so many other things also. And Unfortunately, some of those things are, those other attachments are more prominent in attachment to Krishna, as we well we know when we're trying to chant japa and concentrate on Krishna. The mind will always go somewhere else, right? means even unknowingly, that means you've got something better, a better place to go to, or maybe a better place to go to, or something like that. Otherwise, why is it going? So there's, but no, attachment means you'll have, you know, you'll have some taste, because attachment comes from ruchi. That's the same word, ruchi. From that taste, that will produce the attachment, because it's taste that we want, it's happiness that we want. For satisfaction that we want. So that comes at the stage of ruchi. And that ruchi comes from that happiness of ruchi comes from the stage of ashakti. Ashakti is the stage of satisfaction. Self-realization. And that satisfaction comes from the when all these unwanted things go away, anatta nivritti. This is a gradual process of bhakti for those who don't have love for Krishna. Then we're obliged to follow this process by which the attachment will gradually develop for Krishna. But these anatta nivritti, anatta is all the unwanted things, which is practically everything in the material world. So we have to dovetail, we have to have this body making so many demands, and we have to cater for those demands. It's like we haven't eaten for maybe 12 hours. So, you know that in a while you're going to get hunger signals, right? So before the signals come, before the belly department starts to give signal, red alert to the mind. The mind is managing it. It's our manager, the mind. Red alert. Pain in belly's calling. Quick, what to do? So you don't do like that, right? Probably everyone here knows where their breakfast is going to be. It's already pre-arranged. So then you can be peaceful. You don't have to. But then there's lunch, and then there's dinner, and then there's all those. You've got to have your jacket this weather, you've got an umbrella today. Then you're going to have a place to stay. So that before the problems come, we have to make arrangements. And the mind is like that. So we're busy making all these arrangements. Intelligent. Material intelligent. But how much time do we spend on arranging for the future that we do actually, you know, remembering of serving Krishna, thinking of how to please Guru and Krishna rather than how to keep ourselves satisfied and happy. So that the program is to get rid of the anathas, then we have to associate with the sadhusanga. That's what we did. So Prabhupada gives the way to do it. The way to do it. That you. You practice bhakti yoga, increases one's attachment to Krishna. If one daily sees the deity in the temple, makes offerings, worshiping the deity, chants the holy name, and practices, preaches about the glorious activities and pastimes as much as possible, then he becomes attached to Krishna. Then we have sadhusanga, mahaprasadam, all these kind of things. they lead to the attachment to Krishna. And simultaneously becoming attached to Krishna, then to that degree you're not attached to your material life. That's the learning process. My mind cut the bank, he was just one moment. And Krishna says here, one who knows it. Quoting from Bhagavad Gita, one who knows it. The transcendental nature of my appearance and disappearance does not, upon leaving the body, take its birth in the material world, but it takes my eternal body. So that's what we want to learn. We want to know the transcendental nature of his appearance and activities. We know that Krishna appears to, primarily for his devotees, to diminish the anguish of his pure devotees. Those pure devotees that have this great attachment for Krishna. They're longing for Krishna. They're feeling great separation from Krishna. So to destroy that separation, or to break that separation in Krishna comes. Then he also kills the demons. Secondary thing, but his first premise, his first idea is to satisfy his devotees, give his devotees his darshan by coming here and performing his wonderful pastimes, and you see that's the activities of the Lord. When he comes here, what does he do? He has his playful pastimes, loving pastimes, and but he's always thinking of the welfare of his devotees. Right? When the demons were attacking Gopal, Krishna suggested they move. When Krishna went to Mathura and killed Kamsa, then he killed Kamsa to protect his devotees, to release his mother and father from prison. And because Kamsa was doing a lot of evil things also. But then when the other kings were also coming to challenge Krishna, he thought, devotees in Vrindavan, they have a great separation from him. They're suffering like anything. But if I go back, then the spies will know that I'm very attached to these people in front. And then they will come and harass. If they can't get me, they'll come and harass those big buses. So he thought, better I don't go. So it is all great pain. Also, he didn't go to back to Vrindavan so much because of fear that the enemies will find out and harass the Vrishbhasis. But what did he do when they were being harassed in Mathura? So he killed all the demons, killed Jarasandha 21 times. He brought huge armies, so Krishna didn't have to go anywhere. He never killed Jarasandha. He never killed him because he never go back, amass another army, and then come back. And Krishna wouldn't have to go and kill all the Kshatriyas. The proud Kshatriyas himself, he just let Jarasandha bring him to him. And then 18 times he defeated them all to protect his devotees, so that they have a nice saintly government with the leading people progressively on them. Back to God. And then he went to help his devotees, 16,000 queens who were kidnapped. Right, who is it? Oh. So Krishna did that, he went to save them. And they had no shelter. So he gave them shelter and married them. Otherwise, he said, no one will marry us. We've been kidnapped by another man. So he did that. And he also kidnapped Rukmini because of her great love for him. He went and rescued Rukmini. And he brought back the sons of his guru for Dakshin, made them happy. So that's what he was doing. He was going around different places, and even in low planetary systems, he went there, get darshan to Balidas, and others. He went to, because Mahavishnu desired to see him, he went with Arjuna to Mahakampura, beyond the material coverings. So you see, his life was just, you know, giving his, showing his favor to his devotees, and protecting the devotees. So, you see, Krishna is actually very selfless. And the, he said, you know the nature of my appearance and activities. So that's the nature of his activities. He's very, very caring, very, very loving, very. Was it all those qualities of, you know, very compassionate that he's coming to protect his devotees, protect their anguish and the feelings of separation, and give them protection and solace. So that's his nature. So you know that, if you know that, how kind he is, then he says you don't have to take birth again. Because that's the nature of his activities. His real nature. So, and according to your relationship with him, then Krishna will reciprocate with that. For the demon, he kills the demons because they see him as an enemy. So if you want to be an enemy of Krishna, Krishna also reciprocates. It's his kindness. He's fulfilling your desire. It's not very good to be an enemy of Krishna. It's not recommended. Because if Krishna says you want to be an enemy, okay, I'll be your enemy, but he's formidable, Krishna. No one can overcome Krishna, so then he kills him. So then he purifies them of that idea to conquer Krishna or be greater than Krishna. So he purifies that, that's his kindness on them. So, but it's up to the living entity, whatever relation, particular relationship one wants with Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates like that. You want to be a friend, he's the best friend. You want to be a human being's enemy, he's the worst, the biggest enemy. So that you make a mistake when you become an enemy of Krishna. But that's, he's indifferent. Krishna's indifferent to all these things because he's an Atmarama, and his nature is that he's actually nothing to do with the material world. Although it's his creation. And he enters into it, but still he's not. He's nothing to do with the material world in as much as he does. Why would he look for happiness in the inferior energy when he has happiness in the superior energy? And he has the Haladevi Shakti, that's his thing. Why would he take pleasure in the so-called happiness of this material world? So he, therefore, Krishna is difficult to understand. No one can understand him very well. Because he doesn't function like we function. We function here for our own benefit. How will I be benefited? So therefore we're always making plans how we can benefit, but unfortunately, all the plans are for the body, more or less, which is what we're more or less forced to do it because of the nature of the body. It has to be fed, it has to be clothed, it has to be kept warm, it has to get cool, right? It has to have the right food, right? Things like that. You're more or less forced to do it, but Krishna's not like that. He doesn't operate like that. But that's how disease, if we give more importance to the to our own satisfaction than Krishna's satisfaction. But actually, you're never satisfied because the senses are always demanding. Everything is temporary here. Your happiness is temporary. You eat the meal, your happiness is there. Some good feeling is there, security is there, but after 6 hours it goes away. And you have to do it again. So it's the same with everything you get. address them. Ananda means the mind is saying, I like this, I don't like that. This is good, this is bad. this I will benefit. This I won't benefit from it, so I reject that. And I'll attempt to get what is favorable, attempt to avoid what is unfavorable. This is material life. This is all that goes on in material life. But Krishna's not like that. He doesn't have any needs because he is already fulfilled. He is already Atmarama. But we have a need. We have that liking. But the problem with the material life, it's unsatisfactory because it doesn't last very long. When we get satisfaction, then you wake up in the morning, you have the same problems again. You have to look forward to go do the same thing, you have to go through the whole day and get through the day, and then you basically go to sleep, then you wake up and you do it all again, you do the same thing again. So what do you actually gain from it? And then it terminates in suffering. So you think we're going to build a nice house, we have a nice family, and they will protect me, and there will be lots of nice enjoyment there, but it turns out, at the end, it turns out the opposite. Because as you get old, you can't enjoy it. And the security goes because you have to leave it all. So what we actually desire, it turns out, you get the opposite at the end. We're dreaming that we're going to be actually fulfilled, that life and existence will be fulfilled. But it doesn't work. That's history. I mean, nobody's actually successful in life like that, because everything is going to be taken away. A Krishna's not like that. He doesn't have any need. He doesn't have any want. So if there were no pleasures, if they stopped, there was no hunger, no thirst, no lamentation, right? No fear. What would we do? If you didn't have that, what would you do? Right? And you're not compelled to eat, make programs to eat, to work, that you have to defend yourself, which is the problems don't exist. Which is what we want. This is what we're working for this cessation of problems, so that we can actually enjoy it. But now, how will you enjoy it? So it's not really in our curriculum how we will enjoy it. A little bit. A couple of hours a day, you get free time, prime time. That's all. When you finish the work, when everything is taken care of, you've got a few hours before you have to sleep. So within that time, we make some kind of program for actual happiness. It's not guaranteed. So that's how we're operating. That's how we're conditioned like that. So that's our nature. Our nature is selfish. We're thinking about our own security and our own happiness. That's first and foremost. And anyone who helps me or assists me, I'll be a friend. That's the foremost thing. So this is the motivation for everything we do. But the Krishna's not like that, and his pure devotees also. Therefore, they're able to understand. They're not motivated like we're motivated. How can you understand them? Why they're doing things? They're not doing them things that we do. Like a mad person, he does things, funny things, because it's completely unexpected. Why is he doing such a thing? You can't figure out why they're doing such a thing, or saying such a thing, because they're a little mad. It's quite humorous to see it. But for the saints or the great souls, they also appear sometimes like a little madman disarranged, because they're not functioning like we function. They don't put in the priority on eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So what do they do? So if all those things are taken care of, then what do we do? Huh? We really want loving relationships. That's what the, and enjoy those relationships. Right? In every culture, you see, at the end of the day, what happens? They go with their family, lock the doors, and go with their family. That is what every culture practically. So that's what the reality is like that. But there, in the reality in the spiritual world, there's no cessation of that. In the material world, it's just a little glimpse of it. So you can't be completely satisfied, you can't be completely happy here. So that nature, we have to. That is the. These are the anathas. How am I going to move? What program am I going to make to avoid this sin? Because what I desire and what I don't desire. So give up these two things, what I like and what I don't like. This is to the boxes down the side, so I go say, the big question is in life. Mainly the big question for clearing the spiritual path. What am I going to do about my likes and dislikes? Am I just going to try to fulfill them? Or am I going to say, something else? That's not very important what you like and what you don't like in the long run. It's not very important. It's what Krishna likes and dislikes. That's the more important thing. And catching on to that, understanding that Krishna's likes and dislikes are more important than our likes and dislikes. Because they're reality. His likes and dislikes, if we go into that mode, then you don't have to take birth again. Because you don't like anything and you don't dislike anything here. So if you like something here, you're attached to it, attachment comes from the pleasure, then you take birth to achieve that in a better way. And if you don't like something, you'll take birth a different kind of body where you have some resilience to that, what you didn't like, if your karma is good. But in any case, we're attached to the feeling of safety, the fearing of the danger, and we're attached to that feeling of happiness. So these are the, and that's where, because you know, the sensation is there, because there is a feeling of relief, there is a feeling of happiness, then we become attached. Because we're getting some fixed. So you can't really let it go until you get a higher taste. Because you got to have taste, you see. And when it's tasted, there will be attachment. So until you get to the state of ruchi, then it's always troublesome. Life is always troublesome because, you know, their mind is offering securities, is offering happiness, which we experience. That's why it's very difficult to say no, because they're the things that we are looking for. She's given for a little while. You can have them for a little while. So until you actually get into something better, or more permanent happiness, more permanent feeling of security, then how can you give this up? Because that's the goal, right? That's our goal, right? Security and happiness. So these, we're one of the four pious people that come into Krishna. We're coming to Him to fulfill our needs. And then, so we do what He recommends us to do, and that is the process of bhakti is also purifying process, without any focus on trying to purify yourself, just by performing activities that are favorable to Krishna. Krishna likes to worship Krishna, to hear about Krishna's qualities, his pastimes, his identity, his nature. Then we begin to appreciate it. He's a really nice person. He's a really, he is your best friend. He is your well-wisher. That's why he's come. What is he doing in the material world? He's not come to enjoy it. He's come to give that happiness and security to all to anyone who wants it. And wake us up that this is not the place. You're in the wrong place. So then we have to hear. Part of bhakti is hearing, right? And we hear about the reality, What the life in the spiritual world. Exactly what we're looking for. Trouble-free life full of happiness. Exactly what we're looking for. So then, by that association with devotees and practicing things, then automatically you're getting purified. Because you're not focused on your own self-interest, so that desire becomes weaker and weaker, more and more purified, automatically. But it won't be until the stage of Bhuti that you actually fix. Shakti Bhuti. then Maya is still there, still in an outfit, it's still something we need to address, we can't just dismiss or be indifferent to. Because if you want to be indifferent to Maya's threat of fear or Maya's offer of enjoyment, you have to have something better already. So that's that time stage of Ruchi. Then attachment. So that is attachment to Krishna, that's perfection. Once you got that attachment to Krishna, then there's practically no way back. So this is what Maharaj Tattavanga, at the very last moment, he knew that was just he knew what to do. He just went to meditate on the lotus feet of Krishna. So that was a shortcut. He may have had to go through all these other, he was a king and he was doing a lot of administration and stuff like that. But he knew what to do because he had his code of Brahmanas. So he did that. It was a lucky special case. What was it? What word he used? Unusual word for Prabhupada. Sound like you're going on the market. Brilliant, yeah. The example of Vanga Maharaj in performing devotional service is brilliant. Another word I've never read before. Prabhupada's teaching is brilliant. But here I know the Maharaj uses about 10 years. Anyway, brilliant because he didn't have to go draw that, you know, it just one minute, one moment, he was back to Godhead. Shortcut. Katwani Maharaja ki, Bhakti Yoga ki, Sri Krishna ki, Sri Bhagavatam ki, Sri Goga Pandi.
Stuck up in Anarthaniruddhi stage for many lifetimes. So how can we fasten or quicken this process and up to Ashakti? Are there ways we can quicken this process up to Ashakti?
No, there's no other way. You've got to go through this first program. But it depends on you. It depends on each individual. According to your sincerity, then you'll go that quick or that slow. According to how much actually you want to surrender to Krishna, and how much you're actually willing to surrender to Krishna. So when you apply that is the distance between you and the perfect stage of a Shakti. So, Katanga didn't have any problem, and the alternative, because he knew it was right now, but we think we're not going to die, that's the problem. Living into this and conditioned living into it, thinking I'm not going to die. So we don't think it's so urgent to surrender to Krishna. So we become a little complacent. From complete forgetfulness, we become to Krishna. Now we heard of Krishna, but still we're a little complacent. Otherwise, why are we not surrendering? We know the process. So as quick as you want it, Prabhupada said it can take a thousand lifetimes or a moment. The thing is to surrender. So the surrender is an ongoing process. It's an ongoing process. You surrender when you wake up in the morning, you go and take your bath, do your ablutions, you put on your tilak for Krishna, I put a new clean cloth, we go to the temple for Krishna, we see the form of Krishna, we dance before Krishna, we chant. Prayers glorifying the devotees of Krishna, we worship Tulsi. That's, you're just absorbed in those things. Because in the initial stage, because it's a sense of duty, the spiritual master told me to do this. And I'm not my spiritual master, so I would do it for him. So that's, you know, why are we doing that? It's not mine, you see. So then your karma is being diminished. You're not getting new karma. At the same time, you're not going to experience your karmas which are due because you're doing the right thing. Then it does become friendly. They don't make any problems if you're actually taking the path of surrender. It's what we're supposed to be doing. So as sincerely as you're doing it with the right, with the proper purpose, in the proper consciousness, so that's as fast as it goes. So that's what we want. And as the faith has to become bigger and bigger and bigger. But first we have to realize that we are dependent on Krishna. We are conditioned souls, we do need help. This is the only program that's going to get us out of the material world. We've got to be convinced of that, so that we have to hear about the nature, Krishna's nature, and the nature of the material energy. This is what we're dealing with most of the time. And how we're being bound by it. It's completely occupying the whole days, body, and the future. So therefore we're done. So we're giving more importance to that because of experience. Because there is some heaven, there is some pleasure. We know if we don't do that, if we don't arrange breakfast, we're going to have problems. So we already arranged it. So we arranged last night or something. We know where we're going. So we're always thinking ahead because we know problems are going to come. It's the material world. But that's how we're being whipped, and the material nature is whipping us. So through that, you live simply, you regulate your life so you don't have the problems. You don't work hard. And then you can focus, when you're peaceful like that, your regulation, you become peaceful. When you're peaceful like that, then you can start to think about the actual meaning of your existence. You know, get to all the emotions of what's it all for. We want to feel Krishna's love, and he's willing to give it. But we've got to have a clean heart, an open heart. That's what we're actually looking for. So when you're regulated, peaceful, then you don't have to worry about eating, sleeping, maybe defending. And you've got your program, you've got a spiritual program to follow, at least morning and evening. So yeah, almost half the day you're engaged in 4, 5, 6 hours of the day is direct devotional service. Then the other activities are supporting your service. But it depends on sincerity. Going to Rupa Goswami, once you have knowledge, you know what to do, and you're doing it, then it depends on sincerity of purpose, why you're doing it. You have to change me to Krishna. Then for Krishna's background and my own benefit. So that only you can do. Only each individual can do that. No one can do it for us. Bye-bye.